We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on AM 580, 90.9 FM HD3, and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director is Jason Croft. The producer for Focus is Harriet Williamson. It's the first Friday of the month, the first Friday of a new year, and dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us this morning. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Jim and his wife raise Malamutes. Carol has a golden and a doodle, and they join us on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs. Listeners, you're invited to join us this morning with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Good to see the two of you.
Happy New Year,
Happy
Celeste.
Happy New Year. Did you have a good holiday break?
I did. It was enjoyable. I got to spend some time with my dogs.
Wonderful.
So I liked that.
Yeah. Jim, how are you and Robin?
I think I have a cold. And Robin had knee replacement surgery, and she was playing soccer yesterday, so no.
You know what? I actually believed him.
I was thinking
but
maybe
her therapy
maybe she
is
was
going
up and,
real well,
well
and I recommend that everybody get their knee replaced. So.
Okay. Whether you need it or not.
Whether you need it or not.
There you go. Proactive.
So, well, send her our best. And how are the dogs?
Everybody's just fine. And I'm happy to say, since I had a broken foot since August, that I'll soon be able to walk them again. That's a big thing. That's like...
Your foot's healed or not?
Well, I think it is, but I'll find out for sure next week. But whether it's healed or not, I can resume walking them because I was walking them while it was broken and it really hurt, but I didn't know my foot was broken. So I suggest to everybody not to self-medicate or...
walk on a broken foot.
Or walk on a broken foot because it really hurt. So... I followed my doctor's advice, and I wore the big boot, and you can't really walk far in that. And walking the dogs had to cease, and they miss it, and I miss it. Yeah. So I'll be
Did you
grateful.
Have a friend help out or anything?
No, I had plenty of offers, but, you know, it's odd. I would worry, you know, that they would get away or that they would see how misbehaved my dogs are. And
So it's all about
it's a
little
you. Ego there. Yeah. But no, they, you know, I kept them occupied. And, but there is nothing that really compares to going out for a walk with your dog, whether it's around the block or 3 or 4 miles. It's just a wonderful thing to be able to do. And I'm looking forward to resuming that activity.
Yeah. So they were able to romp in the backyard or something?
Yeah, and I play games with them in the house. Yeah. I hide things
Monopoly.
For them to find. Actually, they like checkers.
Nixon's dog?
Oh, they like Scrabble. But no, I just keep them entertained. I buy them the raw femur bones and spend time with them, you know, and explain to them that mommy couldn't go for a walk because her foot is broken, which meant nothing. Those words meant nothing to them.
Right.
But I would say it frequently. And I can't wait for the day that I get their leads out and we go.
Yeah. So how are the dogs out at Poker Flats? I know that there's a – you had a – the somebody had a litter recently.
We had a litter
dogs?
Back in October.
Oh, they're
October.
So cute. They brought two Tuesday night.
We brought two to the meeting. They're growing apace, and they're not eating any less. I'm not one of those that romanticizes puppies because I have to put up with them. So
I know.
When people get the dog, it's all the puppy. It's all nice, but – Mom, the mother dog, and I have to put up with the dog. The puppy's biting us all the time, and the puppy's pooping everywhere. And...
No, they're cute. But
yeah, they're cute.
Adorable.
I say if puppies weren't cute, we'd eat them.
Oh, what a cheery
thought. Their behavior is
They're a handful. They are.
They are. Yeah.
Well, they don't know any better. Yeah. So, right.
But with some guidance from their human companions, they grow up to be wonderful.
Well, it's interesting to see mothers discipline the puppies because they're not nice at all. They go arr, and bite them and leave my food alone, says mom. And by golly, they leave her food alone.
Well, speaking of bringing up a companion animal from a youngster, you've got some training classes coming up?
Oh, we had orientation for home companion last night, and it was like a rock star sellout. I mean, we were packed. So all our home companion classes are more than full. We actually have a waiting list, so we could have a fifth class and just on the people on the waiting list, and classes start Sunday night. So, and you know, I always mean to say this, and if you're interested in training your dog, feel free to stop by our facility without your dog and watch classes that are in session and get a feel for what our building's like, what we're like, and how everybody's just so happy.
And also check out the website because you'll see dogs in action at the club.
And it's always new and improved. Our website's really very good. So
okay. Somebody needs to update, though, the information about where you guys appear on the radio now.
Ah. Oh, yeah. But somebody said to me at work, I said, well, I'm on the radio today. And they said, well, I didn't know that you were going to be on, even though I have been on, and Jim has, but I don't think there's...
We've moved from 1 o'clock to 11 o'clock.
Yeah. So we will do that.
Okay. Let's talk with a listener now, somebody calling in to talk with our guests today. Dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana are here with us this morning. This listener is in Linden, Indiana. Line 1, hi.
Good morning. Good morning. A little snuck down here in Linden, but otherwise, not bad.
Okay.
Question regarding puppies. My mother-in-law says no good deed goes unpunished, and I made the mistake of feeding a stray bitch who subsequently delivered 8 puppies. They were born in the 10th of November, so they're now about 8 weeks old. I have them in my shop, but they're getting big and things are getting difficult. I wondered if I moved them outside, what sort of protection they did in this 0 to below weather.
What kind of puppies are they?
Well, I think the mother's probably a purebred pit bull, and since all these things look very pit bullish, she might have been bred by a male pit bull. She weighs about 55 pounds.
How much do the puppies weigh?
About 7 3/4 pounds right now.
Are you going to keep them all?
No, I'm not. But unfortunately, they have mange, and I've been treating them with Ivomex until I get them cleared up. I don't think they'll be very attractive, even if they are then.
Demodex or Sarcoptic?
I think it's Sarcoptic. However, the Ivomec treats both of them, so, you know.
Your shop is unheated, I take it.
No, it is heated. No, it's heated.
Oh, well
you know.
They're very happy in there.
Yeah.
But you want to put them outside.
Well, I need more space. And
most dogs can handle the moderate cold that we have now. Pit bulls, though, are short-coated dogs, and it's not the coat. Like Malamutes, of course, have a big, lush coat, but the coat keeps the skin and the surface warm and keeps the wind off of them, and it's somewhat waterproof. What keeps the dogs actually warm is the fat layer that they have underneath that coat. Pit bulls have a little bit of a fat layer, but not an 8-week-old one that weighs 8 pounds. So if it got really cold, like...
Tonight?
Yeah, like below 15 degrees, let's say. I think they'd have a little trouble dealing with that much cold overnight. You know, they could go out for a half hour in that kind of cold to relieve themselves, and it wouldn't do much. But to keep them overnight, considering they don't have a coat and they don't have a lot of fat, would be problematic.
Oh, they probably would die.
I don't think they – well
– they could.
It's not impossible. So I would wait a little while. What you can do – do you have a like a crate, a doghouse or something like that?
Oh, I've got several doghouses. I've had dogs over the years.
Mm-hmm.
No, puppies won't survive in this weather, and it's just going to get colder, and it's going to be cold all through next week. And it's not just the nighttime, it's the daytime as well. So I would strongly recommend you not put them outside. What I wonder if you – okay, so where is Linden, Indiana?
Linden?
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's about 30 miles south of Terre Haute and probably 15 miles east of Highway 41.
Well, I was thinking, you know, our shelter here has foster parents, and they'll take in puppies or dogs with issues such as mange and treat them. The puppies are losing out on socialization with other people and with other dogs. And taking care of eight puppies by yourself and then trying to somehow find a home for them when they'll probably be, I would say, 16 weeks old, 12 to 16 weeks old. That's going to be hard, too. So you might want to work with your shelter in Terre Haute. I know they've got a nice one there. And see if they can't help you somehow. Does that sound feasible?
Well, I suppose it's feasible. I don't know whether I've been successfully treating them for mange, and the mange is disappearing, and I thought they would have a much greater chance of finding adoption if they didn't have scabs all over their noses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you wouldn't necessarily be handing the dogs over to the shelter.
They go into foster
care. They go to people that take them into their homes and foster them.
Mm-hmm.
And the dogs really don't see the shelter. And the foster parents are used to puppies with special needs that need medications and things like that.
Well, I'll check with the local shelter and see what I can do. As far as socialization is concerned, they get a lot of that. I like dogs, so they get patted and roughed around and picked up and petted and the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good if you can get friends to come over and do the same thing with them so they could get used to various people and various ways that people smell.
And they've had all their vaccinations and everything already?
Nope, they haven't been vaccinated yet.
It's a little early.
8 weeks?
8 weeks, maybe. Yeah, maybe it's about time.
Yeah, I think they probably need distemper and so on now. I mean, thinking of getting in touch with a vet.
Yeah. And have your vet look at the puppies and see how – did he see them for the mange?
No, he didn't. I took the bitch in to get taken care of, and that cost me $174, and I probably got about $80 or $90 in feed and newspapers and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Since I'm not an unlimited supply of money, I'm.
Yeah, I think that reaching out and getting some help is probably would be high on my list for you because the puppies will get bigger, they'll be harder to place, and if you don't have the financial resources to take care of nine dogs because they're going to eat a lot, then I would. And even try calling our local shelter, the Champaign County Humane Society, and see if they can't help you network and find somebody that can help you.
I appreciate the advice. Thank
you
very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this morning. Other calls are invited, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. And we also are available by email, will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. This is Focus. Our guests this morning, Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs. Well, this gives us an opportunity to talk about services that shelters offer, and they're always in need of good people to lend a hand and lend their support, financial and moral, and as a volunteer. And there are lots of ways you can help out. And there are some really excellent people around here I know who are fostering animals, cats and dogs.
See, in this situation, isn't unusual, but I, you know, he needs some help somehow.
Certainly.
And
yeah.
Just reaching out to one organization would lead to others trying to help.
And there are people who really want to help. And
oh, they want to. And I know that one of our foster families had a litter of puppies that had severe, severe mange. And it's a lot of work to get them through it. And but they did, and they're beautiful dogs now. But I think that a vet visit would be in order, and even his veterinarian might be able to reach out and find somebody to help him out.
Yeah. Other questions about dogs, again, are invited. No one's waiting on the phone at the moment. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. And we've got an email question now that's come in. Our daughter's dog, a mix of border collie and some type of a spaniel, is occasionally left with us for a day or so. When she's with us without her family, she stops eating and drinking and sometimes throws up. As soon as the family is back, everything comes back to normal. We frequently visit our daughter, and the dog knows and loves us, too. She tracks us closely throughout the day when she's left with us, but still remains sad. Any remedy?
For the sadness or for the not eating?
Yeah, there's a number of things there, yeah.
I think they're doing everything they can. I tend not to worry too much when a dog doesn't eat for a day. There's a million and one reasons why that might happen, not all of which are bad. We had a Ross, remember Ross?
Mm-hmm.
We'd go to dog shows, and Ross would not poop for the entire weekend.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Oh, man. And I'd walk him and walk him and walk him. And
that's really distressing. It's worse than they're not eating.
And he's, you know, and he's starting to pooch out a little on the tummy, and he's at a dog show, so he's supposed to look slim and trim. But he just didn't. When he was on the road, he didn't eat. And he was otherwise, you know, not in a bad mood. This ought to get a little better with the dog as time goes on, and they get more and more used to mom and dad. Or grandma and grandpa, I guess.
Yeah.
What they can do, simple little things like if the daughter has a blanket that the dog lays on or toys that it plays with, they may have already thought of this, but, you know, take them over so that the dog has some familiar smells. She can give them some of her clothes so the dog can smell them and be assured that they're coming back. Because, you know, dogs... There are two things they never know. Are you ever coming back? And
right.
Are you ever going to feed me again?
Yeah.
And they have no reason to believe that either would happen,
yeah.
So except all of their experience, but they don't think that way.
Yeah.
So they can do little things like that. Get a canine companion. Maybe have the dog play with the neighbor dog or cat or whatever they can get along with. And to elevate their mood a little bit. I wouldn't try to force feed the dog or give it a roast beef or anything like that to entice it to eat. The one thing I could think that would go bad is the dog would go home and say, "Where's my roast beef? I'm not going to eat at home unless I get roast beef." And you could be creating a monster. We did that. We had a dog that was... treated for some stomach ailment. And when he came home, he had to eat boiled rice and hamburger.
Chicken. Oh, hamburger.
Hamburger. And boy, did he love that. And he ate it for a week, and then he went back to the regular old dog food. And he literally put his nose under the dog dish and threw it down the stairs. And Robin said, okay. And she cleaned it up and did not feed him. And the second day, she put down the regular dog food. This is absolutely true. And he put his nose under it and knocked it down the stairs. And the third day, Robin cleaned it up, and he didn't eat that day. Third day, she puts down the regular food. He picked up one kibble. And if dogs could have a, you know, look on their face of, ugh, well, that was the look on his face. And he chewed one kibble, then he chewed another kibble. It's okay. You want to go 3 days without eating, that's fine. And he went back to eating, but he wanted his hamburger and rice. So I wouldn't try to force the dog or lure it with special food. If she doesn't eat, it's not the end of the world. Now, if it goes on for days, then you got a problem. But one day, you know, I could go a day without eating without hurting myself.
Yeah, it's just stress. Jim's mm-hmm. right. He doesn't know that the dog doesn't know that they're necessarily coming back, even though this may have been going on for a couple of years. Some dogs just get stressed because they're not with their family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even though the grandparents are family substitute, the dog doesn't really know that.
Yeah.
So
I know that
they shouldn't take it personally.
For cats, there are collars that are treated with pheromones.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have such things for dogs?
They do. Not the collars, but they have, there's pheromone tablets and pheromone sprays. And but if the only thing the dog's not doing is eating, if she's not showing any really aberrant behavioral things, then I wouldn't worry about that too much. Jim's right. Just, you know, just a little blip in her life and it'll be over in 24 hours. She'll be good.
Yeah. And now to segue from your story about the dog unhappy about his food, here we have another email question. When I have to leave my dog while at work most of the day, she pushes her bowls of food and water around the house, spilling food and water everywhere. She's a 60-pound dog. I've tried the rubber dual bowls, and she's still able to push them around the area I keep her in. Any thoughts how to teach her how to stop this? She only does this when she's alone.
Well, she needs some
activity
or some toys or something, because that's become her amusement, is to push things around. And I wouldn't leave food out all day either.
Yeah, there are two ways to feed your dog. Free feeding, where you have food out all the time, and meals, where you have a prescribed amount. With puppies, we tend to free feed, but especially when we're weaning. But when the dog's a little older and can eat a meal, you want to keep have them eat a meal so you know how much they're eating and how fast and that kind of stuff. But, yeah, she's using
it's her source of amusement.
I wouldn't keep food down all day. Water's a different problem.
Mm-hmm.
You
she might
have
want
water.
One of those, not a fountain, but the container that has a certain amount of water
in it.
Looks
like the water cooler.
Yeah.
Human water cooler.
Yeah. And they sit on the floor, but it would be difficult for her to push that around because...
Yeah. The water in it weighs about 20 pounds.
Yeah, she'll have access to water,
mm-hmm.
but it will take away some of that playful aspect of the water bowl.
Yeah, is this the kind of fountain that, like, drips?
Yeah, it just always keeps a water level sustained, but it's not a fountain.
It looks like a big mm-hmm. bottle that the water coolers mm-hmm. have, and you turn them upside down, and because of the vacuum inside the bottle and the water level mm-hmm. in the dish, it... As the water level goes down, the big bubble goes up in the thing. Those are pretty heavy and difficult to knock around. Although a 60-pound dog that was creative might be able to figure a way.
But she just needs some things to...
What are those toys that you load?
Oh, Busy Buddies that I love. Busy Buddies.
You put some mm-hmm. peanut butter in there, or you put a little food
kibble
in there.
Kibble and the Busy Buddy. Premier makes them. So you can go online, premier.com, no E on the end of Premier. And see their line. They have excellent interactive dog toys.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take another call now. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a suggestion that the woman that was having trouble with her daughter's dog mm-hmm. Not wanting to eat and being sad when she was at her house, although she loved her. Many years ago, I had a beagle mix that we would leave with my mother and father while we went on vacation, sometimes as long as 3 months. And we found that if they came and picked her up, she thought she was going to camp and she was going on vacation and it was wonderful and she was happy. But if we took her over to my parents' house in another city and dropped her off, then she was kind of sad. She was fine, and I think she did eat all right, but they said that if we dropped her off, she would sit in the window and look for us and, you know, look kind of sad. But if they picked her up, they would, that she was happy as a Greek. So,
well, that's a great idea.
That's my suggestion.
That's a great idea. Thank you.
And who would have thought of that?
A smart listener.
Yep.
Yeah, well, it's the kind of thing that the radio program is good for, because we have the experiences of a whole lot of people, not just two lame-os like Carol and me.
This is Focus, and our guests this morning are dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. My name is Celeste Quinn. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm going to read a book this winter. I have it sort of set aside. It's called I Thought You Were Dead, and it's it looks, I haven't really
kids
gotten
book,
into
is it?
It. No. No. It's a story of a man and his dog, and they have like a telepathic way to communicate. And the dog, when this man comes home every day, the dog says, "I thought you were dead." Every day. "I thought you were never coming back."
That is how they feel, I think.
Yeah.
I think so. I've got a book. I just ordered it last week that I asked for as a Christmas gift and didn't get it. So I ordered it myself.
Yeah.
But it's A Dog's Purpose. And it's by an author. Last name is Cameron. And his premise is that all the dogs we have in our life is just basically the same dog over and over that comes back to us. Now, I've got to read it. But it got rave reviews. So, and his explanation for this is that's how they know us so well. Because it's a dog you had at one point in your life, but now he comes back on another. I know it's a stretch, but it's been on the New York Times bestseller list for like 50 weeks or something. And
a lot of things make the New York Times
bestseller list. I know, because I don't know what, is it infinite list? I don't know. But anyway. So that's the book I got for myself. So I'm sure I'll be sobbing this weekend. I'm going to read it this weekend.
Well, that sounds like fun.
We'll send you off with some tissues.
I have some.
Tissue? I hardly know you.
And I just finished Lost Dogs about Michael Vick's dogs, and that was a very interesting book. Can't think of Grant, Jim Grant, I think is the author's name. But
in
that was
in terms of what happened to them after
Yeah,
the
what
war?
Happened to them after the... The beginning of the book is a little difficult to read because it goes through some of the experiences the dogs have in a, you know, first person. So that's a little difficult to read regardless. But the rehabilitation process and how many dogs turned out to be just absolutely perfectly fine dogs is astonishing.
Yeah. What did you make of the flap over... I think it was the Humane Society of the United States.
Ugh.
Somebody said Michael Vick could... would
Wayne Pissell.
Yeah, have a dog.
He's the head of the whole thing. Yeah. He thought that he would make an excellent dog owner. I was just appalled.
Yeah, there was a lot of...
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Hoo-ha over that.
Yeah, that's... I shouldn't have my true feelings on the air, I suppose, but that is just absurd beyond imagination. So...
The other thing,
and
I
believe in redemption. So
yeah,
the other thing I'm looking forward to looking into is there was a movie that was released, I think, in 2009, and somehow or other, I never saw it in town at any theaters. My Dog Tulip. Have you heard
of this? Oh yeah, I read the book years ago, and the book was fabulous. It's about a German Shepherd, and I think he's a first-time dog owner, and having this dog in his life made him aware of so many things of which he was unaware. It was a great book. But no, I didn't see the movie. Sometimes, you know, I hate to say it, but I think if you read a really good book like that, that stuck with me for many years, I can't see. I would rather have the memories of the book I read than watching a movie.
Yeah. But anyway, I saw a trailer for it, and it looks beautiful. And Christopher Plummer is the actor portraying the owner, and it's an animated film, but the animation is quite sophisticated.
Yeah. Well, you can get it on Netflix.
Yep. I will do that.
I didn't see the movie either. I can't remember the with Richard Gere, and it was a reenactment of the story about the man that never came home. He lived in Tokyo. He never came home from work, and the dog went to the train station day after day until he died. And there's a statue of him, and I thought,
I think it's in Osaka. But
okay, I think you might be right. I thought, there's no way I can sit through a movie like that. I would be
hysterical. Statue to the, it was in Akita.
Mm-hmm. And, Akita.
They have a, at the train station, they have a statue. But yeah, he went, his master went to town and had a heart attack and died. Mm-hmm.
And he would meet him at the train every night.
I thought
and,
you were dead, you know. And
yeah.
So the dog would amble down to the train station, and there's no master.
Every day.
Every
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
Until the dog died.
Yeah.
He was 12, I think. But that was, you know, that's a story that I, you know, it evokes so many things. And then I thought, well, I don't really see Richard Gere playing the role of an Osaka businessman going on.
No,
train.
I think they translated it to San Francisco.
I know, of course they did, but it just would interfere with my memories of that story.
Is this, that wasn't my dog, Tulip.
No.
Okay.
No.
You switched gears on me.
No, she switched. Oh, no, I switched gears.
Yeah.
You know, I have a bad habit of doing that. Bad habit.
And so suddenly we're talking about this
well, we're talking
other
about
dog, and I'm going,
books
well,
translated
I've
into
seen
movies.
That movie. It wasn't animated, you know.
Gears get switched in conversation, do they not?
Mm-hmm.
Richard Gere.
Mm-hmm. I know. I got it.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
It took me a minute. Yeah. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to talk with us this morning. 800-222-9455 is our toll-free number. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. So,
I see you have a newspaper article or magazine page torn out.
Is it about me?
I see a cat on there.
Yeah, it's from Time magazine from November, and Harriet Williamson clipped this for us. And this was about synthetic, species-specific pheromones. Can they soothe your pet? And the answer is yes, up to a point.
Mm-hmm.
They can help. They're a tool, but they're not going to be a miracle solution. And on the back side of this article, one of them is a diffuser that you plug into the wall,
mm-hmm.
$48.
Oh, I've seen them far more expensive
really?
Than that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the Good Behavior collar for cats, $12.
I think, you know, so much of those things that are touted to work, I think they work because we want them to. So we see things that make us believe they work, or they do work. I've never used one. I've talked to people that say they don't work. I've talked to people that praise them to the skies. Until I'd use one myself. But see, I think my dogs are perfect. I don't need any pheromones for them that I can see. Have you ever talked to anybody that used those?
No. And I keep thinking of the poster of Farrah Fawcett every time you say it.
But if the pheromones worked, why wouldn't we use them on ourselves? So if you're feeling particularly agitated one day, why don't you just press your little diffuser and you'd be surrounded by pheromones that just chill you out. So
could use them in prisons.
Mm-hmm. Could use them in prisons. Good point. But you know what I'm
Thank
saying?
You.
Mm-hmm. I do.
So,
well,
but if a person likes them, believes they work, then I think to go for it.
This article says, research indicates synthetic feline pheromones really do have a calming effect on cats. Numerous studies and journals have found that SIVA Animal Health Fellaway pheromone sprays and diffusers help reduce stress-related behaviors such as urine marking, vertical scratching, and aggression. So, but that's worth a try.
Oh, sure.
It's one more arrow in your quiver, right?
Tool in your trade box.
That's right.
Yeah, it's worth a try. They're not horribly expensive. But
Let's take a call. This is a listener in Champaign waiting for us on line one. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm curious about something. I have had dogs most of my life, have managed dogs, and we currently do not have pets right now. We've moved into a neighborhood where owners allow their dogs to bark. And my question to you is, Have you noticed a difference in mores or expectations in that regard? And I'm talking about barking at 5:30 in the morning, 11 o'clock at night. And some of our neighbors do make an effort to manage barking, but others do not at all. And so I'm just curious your thoughts on this.
Well, I think the change in mores, as you referred to, is very evident when you see the fact that people do obey leash laws. You don't see dogs running around any longer. The barking is an issue. I really and truly believe that people don't hear it because they've become accustomed to it, or they don't mind because they feel the dog is, you know, protecting them. But I really do think they don't hear it. And I'll be the first to admit that I have one dog that barks a lot, and I'll hear her barking, but not until after she's been barking for a while, and then I just call her in the house. And I think you just tend to tune it out, which is really a pretty lame answer, but I'm pretty confident that's the case. What do you think, Jim? You're up on your...
My thought is that dogs in the neighborhood bark, they're left outside and they're alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. People do get used to it. Parents of small children especially don't mind the kids screaming and breaking and stuff and shooting guns and stuff. But as soon as the kids are quiet, the moment they're quiet, you can see mom and dad going, where are the kids?
What are they up to?
What are they up to? So the drone of noise becomes the kind of security blanket or security tie. That, well, the dog's fine because he's barking. He's not dead. He's not injured. He's barking.
So our rule of management was the dog learned that in order to stay out, he did not bark. As soon as he barked, he came in. And it took effort on our part to do that. But the dog learns very quickly. And I even understand there are newer things like bark collars and other things that dogs adapt to very quickly. So are you saying that you think people would just think this is okay if nobody complains and they're just not thinking about it?
No, I don't think that. I think that they're, if nobody complains, they know it's annoying.
Well, I don't think it's a change in mores. Barking dogs are just the classic mm-hmm. local government problem, stray dogs and barking dogs. And if you call the police about a barking dog, they'll come out. I mean, it's not an unknown problem in cities. And it's been that way since people have had dogs in the cities. So I don't think there's any change. You may have moved to a neighborhood where there are more dogs left out and barking, but I don't.
See, I never hear dogs. No one that I know of in my neighborhood leaves their dogs out all night.
And yeah,
no, it's not out all night.
Oh, okay.
It's first thing in the morning
to
do their business, and I understand that that has to happen. But we used to take our dog for a walk, and at first shush, you know, the finger was pointed at them, and they knew to be quiet. And and I can tell just from your answer that you're kind of, I don't know what to say about my question. It's like you think it's an unreasonable expectation that owners should work with their dogs to not have them bark.
No, I don't think it's unreasonable, but you need to talk to them so they're aware that it is a problem for you. They can't guess that it's a problem for you.
And the daytime hours, not a problem. Early evening, not a problem. It's the 5:36 in the morning, the 10:11 at night.
Yeah, that's when people let their dogs out for the first time and out for the last time of the day. So I try to be sent. Well, okay, so I'll tell you a quick story. So I walked into Fannie Mae about 2 years ago, and it was after Christmas sale, and it was packed with people. And my neighbor behind me, who we have a very good relationship, they're great people, saw me walk in the door, and she said, "You have the loudest dog in the whole neighborhood, Carol." And I said, "Well, I guess I do." But I wasn't aware until that she said that to me, and she was very friendly about it. I thought, well, you know, maybe I should pay more attention because their hours are different than mine. They go to bed earlier, and so I just trained Andy to come in, and she gets rewarded, and coming in is not a punishment to her at all when she gets on a barking rampage. So I just bring her in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a true story.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your perspective.
You're welcome.
Next, we take a call from a listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hi. I have a quick question, and I apologize if it's been addressed already. I just tuned in. I've got three boys, age 7 and under, and we just moved to a bigger house. My husband grew up with dogs. I did not, but we've got a cat who is now well loved by these kids, and we're debating, just kind of starting the thinking processes about a dog within the next year. So just wondering about recommendations for breeds versus mixed breeds and types of dogs to look for.
If you have a cat already, you're going to want a dog that won't attack the cat.
Absolutely.
Okay. And finding that out is not that easy. If you adopt an adult dog, you put them both in the same room and see what the dog does.
Okay.
My recommendation would be to get a puppy, which is not my usual recommendation. But if you have a cat and you get a puppy, and it really doesn't matter what breed or what size, as long as they're young enough. And what will happen is the cat will beat up the puppy.
Not that bad,
yeah.
Though. Yeah,
they'll go up and, you know, they'll pat him on the nose, and the cat will say, "Don't violate my space." And the puppy will, as a general rule, will respect that. And then as he grows up, the dog really doesn't know that now he's bigger than the cat, you know, because the cat has had this dominant role in his life. And generally, that's the best way to introduce dogs and cats to each other at a very young age, especially for the dogs.
Okay.
And in terms of what kind of dog, I don't think the relationship with the cat matters as long as it's a young dog. There's not that much difference between mixed breeds and non-mixed breeds. The difference is that if you breed two purebred dogs together, you'll get another purebred dog. If you breed mixed breed dogs together, you get a mixed breed dog. But they're all dogs.
I think you need to look at, too, what your expectations are. If you have a long-haired dog, then you've got hair to contend with. If you get a small dog, that could have its issues. If you get a dog that's too big, so you and your husband need to make the decision on what your tolerance level would be. And I think that I would recommend, you got three young boys, a nice dog from the sporting group would be nice to have. A lab would be perfect. But then you have to look at what your if it's going to disrupt your life that much by having extra tasks of cleaning up mud and hair and things like that.
Right. Yeah, we just got out of diapers. So, all right. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's take another call. Champaign Line 3. Hello.
Hi. I was calling because I was listening earlier and heard the discussion about the book with the that took place in Japan with the Akita, and
uh-huh.
I just wanted to say that I've also read it, and I think the title was called Hachiko Waits. And I just wanted to agree that it was a really heartwarming story and thought that the listeners might want to know the title. And
Thank
then
you.
Secondly, I wanted to say hello to Jim because I just signed up for a class with him last night.
Ah.
And I met him last night, and I already have learned that I was incorrectly using a prong collar on my dog and thought that listeners might benefit from hearing both of your thoughts on which types of collars to use. So I'll just hang up now. And
oh,
listen.
Before you
Thanks.
Go, how long were you there last night?
I was there pretty late. I was the one that stayed after and was talking
oh, okay.
to you a while.
We like to give Jim a hard time because we break our
I talk a
sessions.
Lot.
And, and he's always the last one there. We're already gone. How long were you there? You're not going to admit to it
actually,
anyway.
Actually, I think the Monday night people were there longer than
no,
we were.
No, I'm the Monday night person.
Okay. Well, then maybe it was the Sunday night people. I don't like gimmick collars and leads for obedience training. They have their place. What's called a prong collar or a pinch collar has its place. If you have a dog that's rowdy and jumping and can't be controlled, maybe a pinch collar is called for because you can't train a dog that isn't at least calm and paying attention. Most people use a pinch collar incorrectly, though. And
oh, it's kind of humorous in a way because they'll buy them so large it looks like a big mm-hmm. necklace lying on their shoulders, so which is totally ineffective.
I do not like halties, and I told the class last night, I don't know how to obedience train using a halter.
I love gentle leaders.
Gentle leaders,
I love gentle leader. So we have a philosophical split on that issue, Jim and I.
Well, the point is if you have a dog that's rowdy and misbehaving and you put a halter or gentle leader or pinch on them, they will stop being that. You know, they will not pull or and you then have the opportunity to train them. However, the techniques we generally use for training require a different kind of collar and lead. And especially with a pinch, as soon as you take it off, they're back to their old ways.
See, and
they're not being trained. They're being subdued.
Yeah,
that's my opinion.
That's
I'm
your opinion. And I think that's fine. I use a gentle leader. It depends on what your goals are. If you want to compete in obedience, that's one thing. If you want to have a well-trained family pet, that's another thing. So with our home companion classes, we explain all these venues that are available to people, but I'm just nicer.
Well, years ago, I don't know how it happened, but a woman of about 80 years of age mm-hmm. had a 10-month-old boxer. And just 10 months is just the worst time to try to train a dog. And she just could not handle this dog. And, in fact, nobody could. So we put a pinch on him. And, of course, he calmed right down because he was being pinched. And she never came back to the class. The reason, I think, being, you're right, her goal wasn't to train this dog. Her goal was to subdue it. She didn't know.
I didn't say subdue.
Well, but her goal, I'm not saying your goal. Her goal was to have the dog act mm-hmm. calmly and not jump on her and do all the stuff. And the pinch collar did that. She didn't have to train him to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so she didn't come back, and I think she used the pinch collar for that purpose. But the point is, as soon as you take the pinch off, he's back to
There's so many factors that are in there, the age of the dog, and I don't know. I think that's why as an instructor it's important to find out exactly what the goals of the students are. And in our home companion classes and probably Puppy Elementary and Puppy K, they want to have a well-behaved family member. And we aim to please and help them. For others that have and see our numbers there are diminishing that want to go ahead and compete in obedience, everybody wants to do agility, and that's a form of obedience as well because you have to have the mm-hmm. basics down, but they want a well-mannered pet. And then they get the bug and they want to do competition things and so forth. And now the AKC recognizes all dogs, not just purebred dogs. That's all become easier. So we have to be flexible in our ways of thinking.
No, we don't.
See? See?
What kind of collar do you like to use, Jim?
I use the classic chain choke collar.
Okay.
It can be modified if you have a coated dog like a Malamute or a Sheltie or to a nylon. We call them choker. I call them correction collars. But
I call them slip collars.
Slip collar, okay. Yeah. I think that's what we used with our Weimaraner growing
up. A lot of people use a semi-slip that will tighten on mm-hmm. the neck, but only to a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
We use those in dog sledding. So they tighten without choking, but the dog can't slip their head back out of it. So it tightens enough, but not too much.
See, and I use a martingale collar, and I use a gentle leader, and I use when I showed Robbie, I would show him on the teeniest little chain link collar. I mean, and he was a dream to show on that. It was just I don't know how many. It's just small.
But once you've done a little bit of training, mm-hmm. you can use any kind of collar you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're not when you train the dog, you give some collar corrections, but the fewer and easier, the better.
But my point was I could show him in a ring full of other dogs, and he'd behave beautifully. If I were to just take him for a walk, then I would use a martingale collar. He knew the difference, and, you know, he would just – and it's what your personal tolerance level is. I don't get too wound up if my dogs are pulling, and, you know, it's exciting for them. But different collars, there's different behaviors associated with them, I guess is the way to put it. And I like benign things.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't discourage people. I'll work with them if they want to use a prong collar or harnesses are what really get me the most, though.
Oh, you don't like those?
No.
Why don't you like those?
Because, well, gym sleds, you put a dog in a harness and they throw themselves into it. The harnesses that prevent pulling have the ring that attaches to the lead in the middle of the chest. So the dog doesn't pull you because it doesn't get him anywhere.
And that's my point. When using the equipment to subdue the dog, you're not training them. Mm. And as soon as you don't have the equipment, you have the same old problems. Yeah.
But it helps you see what you can achieve.
Okay. My voice is really going, isn't it?
Yeah, mine is gone.
And I don't know if it's out of sympathy or I've gotten something going here now, too.
Just since we walked in the studio, look how powerful we are.
We'll see you next month.
Sounds good.
Okay. Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us on the first Friday of the month in the 11 o'clock hour of Focus to talk about dogs. We'll see them in February.